I was allocating 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours a day to do a job that could be done in 4 hours. Most of them aren't into working 70 hours a week doing what they do. It's just energetically, it's impossible. The Rocks were requesting that I leave it here. Wow. Yosemite was the mother that absorbed all that for me, that liberated me to explore, leave it here. But it was in that moment, probably a few weeks after, where this vision of a wolf came into my world. And I realized that I am a wolf for these healers, meaning that I am a protector of the healers.
Welcome to the New Age Human Podcast, where we have inspiring conversations with spiritual entrepreneurs in the areas of mindfulness, longevity, and innovative technology. I'm your host, John Astacio, and I'm on a mission to help humanity discover our human potential so we can together create positive change. Remember, the journey starts within. Please like and subscribe wherever you're listening or watching. And with that said, let's get to the show. All right. So we have Kevin Hoover in the virtual building here. Let me introduce you to Kevin. Kevin's the founder of Next Crest Consulting. Kevin's mission is to support coaches and healers as they forge a legacy of significance, not just a business. With personalized guidance, Kevin empowers you to navigate the entrepreneurial landscape with clarity, conviction, and impact. That's his mission statement, and I hope I didn't butcher it. But today, we're going to be talking, the focus will be his journey of transformation. I think we can pull a lot of cool stuff from there. His spiritual awakening, and the obvious advice for entrepreneurs, because let's just take advantage. We have a coach on the mic. Kevin, welcome to the show. How's it going, man?
Thanks, John. Doing well. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be chatting with you. We have, if you're watching, Kevin's got some interesting books. One of them is The Life You Were Born to Live, and we jump into numerology. And Kevin, you were saying that you add that into your sessions, right?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of insight you can find on someone, especially if you are just meeting them or just developing the professional relationship. You know, like there's numbers can really give you a lot of clues as to how we're working together and how we're vibing. And so, yeah, I use it all the time. I love it.
Yeah. When I first was introduced to the numbers game, it was very interesting. So because we're mentioning it, I'm sure there are people in the audience that are familiar with that book. What's your numerology?
I'm a 28-6.
No, I'm a 28-6 too.
Are you really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. That's amazing.
My wife is, she's an 8 as well, but she got there a different way. And I'm trying to remember. I think it's like I think she's a 35-8. And that's why my phone number has like a bunch of 8s in it. If yeah. I could, I would have 8 8s, but now you think someone's calling you and it's like a marketing call.
A marketing call. Spam call.
Yeah, yeah. When I made it, I'm like, okay, this is so cool. And then when I call people are like, I hesitated to pick up because it was just a weird number. I'm like, oh my God. And then after a couple of years, it was just too late. But yeah. I digress. that I just opened up a whole thing, and I have other questions that are very personal. And let's just continue because we're on a mission I want to hear your story. Let's open up that book, that story of your transformation. You as a coach, as a consultant, it wasn't. I don't think it was always like that, but you had a journey that began with a profound crisis in your life around your son. So if you don't mind, let's talk about that.
Yeah, let's do. I'm very keen and very careful on the awakening and to share only my experience and not to say, here's where you go to find it if you're looking for it.
Right.
You know, so I'm very careful. So I think the things that really unfolded in my life were kind of a hard stop to a different path altogether, something that I don't know if I would have explored it at least as soon. But in 2019, my son was 4 and I was running a business. I was running 2 businesses actually. And I was, you know, I was the guy at the soccer field on the phone, putting the deal together. And looking back, I can't believe that was me. If that makes any sense. I look back and I go, it just seems so foreign that that's the guy I became, that that's who I was choosing to be in the moment. But I think that kind of alludes to the fact that in a very small amount of time, the awakening and the process that, if you think about 5 years ago, really, if you look back and say, I can't believe that was me, like that's not a lot of time to make that kind of, 180 spiritually. But in 2019, my son was 4 and he was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And
Nice.
he was, we thought it was just a tummy ache, as, parents do. And we went in to get a scan just to see kind of what would the deal was. We weren't overly concerned. Our doctors weren't overly concerned. And turns out we went in that morning and he was life-flighted with total kidney failure, a tumor in his abdomen. And it was a really,
Wow.
it really thrust us into a world that, I don't think anybody has any business being a part of, is the pediatric cancer world. But I will say he's in the next room. He's 9. He's an honor roll student in third grade. He's on with his class right now. And so the story has a great ending for him. But through that, you really start to question things. When you're sitting in the hospital with, I was with my wife and my son, and you're talking a language you've never spoken before. You're learning things you shouldn't have to learn as a dad, as a person. And you really start to question everything that you've believed up until that point. Like, how is that true if now I turn around and I'm looking at this? And so it just brings this, sort of like churning everything that you've known and learned, putting it in a salad spinner and just spinning it.
Oh man.
And so that's kind of how I equate it. But I think that led to our healing in many, many ways. And there was one particular moment where I woke up. Well, I was awake, but I didn't realize I was awake until my senses came to, and I was on the bathroom floor just sobbing, just purging, and it's I think it's one, I thought it was bizarre that I didn't realize I was awake until I was already there. I was already on the floor and already crying. So I don't have any memory of like getting up, walking to the bathroom, sitting down. I don't have any memory of that.
Wow.
I just came to in the bathroom floor. And I think the reason for that was a protection mechanism for my son, because I didn't want him to see me like that, because he had his own emotions around it. And I don't shy away from crying or emotions. I'm not embarrassed or anything, but it was a delicate situation. If he sees dad that upset, he's going to be upset, and that's not good for anybody. So that was kind of the moment where I started to explore and listen, really. There were voices, and just listening. And where am I being guided? What am I being told? Who is that? Kind of thing. Because it was so foreign to me. And then I was lucky enough to kind of get into that, have people that were in my life already that I could say, hey, I know that thing you do, and I think it's happening over here to me. Can you help me, give me some insight? So I was very, very grateful to have some people who some mediums, some light workers, some healers that were already in my world that could really say, well, check this out, try this, read this book, listen to that podcast, just keep exploring if you feel inclined. And then there was so that was kind of the start of it. And I spent a long time kind of going, nah, that's not, nah. Like I would channel someone in through a session with a client during that time. And it was just very exhausting, very overwhelming for me, very emotional to channel someone in at that point, and use it in my work and actually have to find the courage to say, I think they're here, and here's kind of the message. That was just so foreign to me, but I think being in the situation I was in, where it was just such a, everything was new. There was nothing familiar in my life in that time. And so I think it was, I don't know, maybe a little easier for me to go, I'll grab onto that. That seems real,
So you started to rewind back. You ha already had clients that you were helping with their business, and your clients were already in the light worker field, so to speak,
Yeah,
as this
some.
was happening.
Yeah, somewhere. It was kind of a 50-50 mix. Like I think I was brought people into my life at a certain time so that I would have resources when this actually started going down, right?
Interesting.
And so I did. It was about a 50-50 mix of entrepreneurs, mortgage lenders, real estate, insurance, small business owners, and then the other side were highly spiritual, people who wanted to keep healing and wanted to keep, you know, helping people. And so it was this really bizarre time of like, oh, I see now I see it clearly. I'm like, oh, I see exactly what was happening, you know?
Interesting.
So yeah, it was interesting to have that mix and that those resources available.
I'm curious. So before your son was diagnosed, you were like just business, right? You had the cell phone on the soccer field. And even at that time you had clients that were like, you had a 50-50 client base, spiritual and then non-spiritual conversations.
Yeah.
My curiosity is, when did you start accepting spiritual clients? Like, was there a point where you were 100% non-spiritual clients, entrepreneurs, and then something happened where you're like, all right, like, I wonder how that journey started. Were you always into, you know, spirituality?
I've always been into it. Yes. And I grew up in the Christian church. So there was the transition that was going on, is leaving the religious, you know, sort of the religious upbringing that I had and moving into this new, this purpose that, you know, I was born into or chosen into. So it was always there, but it was more spiritual curious than being an actual practitioner of my spirituality. And so it was there, and I embraced it. I was always, you know, pretty progressive as far as people I would hang out with and whatever. But, you know, I had a person, she's actually a business partner of mine now. She was in my life, and she's a medium, and she would always tell me, she would say, if you're questioning whether you have it, you do. So when you're ready, I'm here.
like your gift type of thing?
Yeah, yeah. Like she would see it. And so it gave me reassurance when things started to show up on a higher vibration. It gave me reassurance that it was real. It wasn't just the trauma that I was experiencing, or it was something that was there before that, and it was acknowledged by a few people before that, and I wasn't at a point to embrace it yet.
So thank you for clarifying. That's interesting that you started to, like, it's like you knew, like, I'm going to need these people. You know, like, I'm going to stick around. Okay. You know, it's almost, and you know, your higher self, it's without time. So there's some synchronicities going on that I'm picking up from you, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. So, going back to that journey of just learning a new language, and, you know, you're on the floor and you woke up, you sleepwalked to the bathroom, and you're just on the floor. When it comes to your son, what was the way that you guys were able to get him out of that situation? Was it a mixture of medical intervention and spiritual? I'm curious on how that turned around.
That's a great question, because that was probably the biggest conflict that I was having at the time. You know, you're dealing with a 4-year-old, and so you have to make decisions based on another human. Like, you can't, you know, the things that I would choose to do, I'm 50. So the things that I would choose to do in my life and my experience, I had to be very careful not to just project that on, listen to the doctors. So we did a mostly science-backed treatment as far as chemotherapy, radiation, all the things they were prescribing. We did get to a fork in the road where my wife and I had deep conversations about if this is not working, it's not effective, this is our next up. And it was pretty much abandoning the science-based treatments and going more holistic and spiritual-based. Fortunate for us, like, everything was working at the time that it needed to work. But so we kind of crossed it. But, you know, some things that really showed up, and you know, if you think about a 4-year-old, you know, I think they're spiritually advanced, probably more so than, you know, the adults in their lives will admit. And so my son, when it started to shape in me and it started to be more comfortable for me, my son latched onto it. Like, I wear these meditation beads all the time, and I have since 2019, because when I'm holding him, he'll grab them and just run his fingers. Like, he just innately knew what to do with them. I didn't explain it to him because I didn't know. Wow. And so we had that connection. There was I've never talked about this, so I'm happy to share this with you on this show. There was a moment early on where I just felt compelled. The voice was, put hands on his abdomen where the tumor is. Just put your hands on his abdomen. and hold space and go into deep meditation. You know, my son's attached to all these machines and he's in the hospital. And I just put my left hand first on his abdomen where the tumor was. And I just sat there. It was just this energy flow. And it felt like it felt like something was withdrawing from him in some way. And it felt like that I was of ability and strength and supported to receive whatever was being transferred. That was the feeling that it got. And that was my first experience of really being in a moment of, you know, I'm very careful to take credit. I don't take credit for his outcome, obviously, but that was a guided act. That was a guided moment. And, you know, he and I just talk a different language. He and I are very telepathic. We are very, you know, we communicate all the time, just basically through our energies. And so that formed in that moment, that was the catalyst for my relationship with my son now, you know, and he even likes to do yoga with me and things like that, where he's just at 9 years old. He's just really in tune with that, even though he might not be able to explain it because I don't ask him to, I don't force him. I'm like, learn how to read and write and learn math, you know, we'll get to all this, you know, but for me, that was kind of the tipping point of something is moving through me for a higher purpose, and something is guiding me to do things that, you know, my upbringing can't explain, nor should it be required to be explained in that way.
And I'd be really like, I got questions.
Oh yeah, I definitely had those, you know, but I also was like, what just happened? Let me process that a little bit. And then as we started going, you know, going through treatment and everything, it just was revealed to me. It was like that moment was very important. Mm. I still to this day don't know what happened in that moment. I have suspicions and theories, but it was just this anchor of that moment was important. Just don't forget that moment. But more importantly, don't forget who you were in that moment. Mm. Don't forget how you were showing up as a healer and a light worker in that moment. You were already doing that. You just weren't acknowledging it. And now we can move forward acknowledging it.
Interesting. And something that popped up, I had done a Reiki course. I didn't finish it, but I did it. And I don't know if this is Reiki, but I just remember energy flow and like all the YouTube university videos I've watched. And you have energy flowing in from the left and out to the right. And it was interesting. I was waiting for you to say it felt like I was pulling in something. Very interesting. Yeah. Very interesting stuff.
Yeah, it really is. But it changed. I think it changed the trajectory. You know, keep in mind, we were very new. You know, this was probably the first month of treatment, and our prescription was 70 weeks of chemo and radiation. So it was over a year. So this was in the first month. It was kind of like, here's how we're going to navigate these waters, these traumatic waters. You're not going to do it by yourself, and you're not going to do it the way you used to do things. And so we've got to catch up. We need you to catch up. And that we did. And I think it was from there that really I was just open to everything. So that we brought in, the nurses used to comment all the time because I brought a bunch of essential oils in, frankincense, lavender, a bunch of these healing oils in, brought a bunch of the healing energy in. Reiki was a big part of my studies during that time. And I'm not a Reiki practitioner now, but I go to my person and I experienced those things. But all of that was part of it, and that happened early on. And I stand behind the fact that our outcome is what it was because of that.
Wow, that's actually pretty cool. Well, first of all, I'm happy to hear that your son's happy, healthy, and that's in the past. But now, because of that, you have much more going on as far as helping. I would call people that are considered spiritual entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Now, what you didn't mention, and I want to get into, is you just packed up and went to an RV and then went across country. And can you kind of explain what was that? Now, full disclosure, authenticity right now. If you're watching me, I'm looking to my left because I straight up through Kevin's bio into ChatGPT, and I'm like, let's see if we have some really cool questions, good questions. And I'm referencing it because good questions. It's helping me be aligned. So if you're a spiritual entrepreneur, don't worry about AI taking over, because it can help with if you're stuck, right?
100%.
But so I'm looking at your lessons from the road. That's what it has highlighted. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. So speaking of traveling, can you break down, like, what did you do? And then I want to get into maybe some people that you helped. So what's going on with this road trip?
It was the grand healing adventure for my family. And so we finished chemo during COVID. It was July of 2020. So COVID was kind of, everyone was in quarantine. We had been in quarantine for a year with cancer, because it does the same. It just wipes out your immune system for my son. So we were quarantined for a long time. And my wife just looked at me. She said, what are we supposed to do now? Like, we were in remission. And she said, what are we supposed to do now? And I said, that's a good question. I don't really have an answer. It's like 5 minutes later, she said, what if we bought an RV and sold the house and just traveled the country and met other kids who were fighting cancer? And I know my wife well enough to know that that idea is right up my alley. I'm a yes on that all day long. And so I had to go to Facebook Live and say, hey, here's what we're doing, before she changed her mind. So made it kind of public knowledge. But yeah, so that was July of 2020. We kind of hung out to make sure my son was okay, and to let COVID kind of to figure that out, because we were still cancer parents at that point. But it was the next summer that we sold our house, bought an RV, and packed up. And neither one of us had ever been in an RV before. The first RV I stepped foot in was a 42-foot fifth wheel that we bought and we were about to move into. And so it was a big learning curve, but we kind of set out with a mission. One was obviously to heal my family and give my son his childhood back. You know, cancer steals that. And so we were trying to do that. But also we were everywhere we stopped, we were going to meet a family that was fighting pediatric cancer and just in some way help them. And we started giving, you know, wagons out to people, but it really was just us sitting with them. And I think there was an element of calm when we sat with people. And it was, the gift was hope. And it was healing in some way. Cause you see a lot of pictures of sick kids. You don't see a lot of pictures of kids who aren't sick anymore.
And it's true.
That being the cancer story, you know, and I understand why, you know, sick kids open up the wallets to get money for research, but we just started doing that. And I live on the coast, on the East Coast, and we drove for 18 months, 14,000 miles, 87 campsites, you know.
Now, was your son on the better side of his healing journey? And that was kind of like the inspiration, like, hey, you know, we helped him out, and like, what can we do to help out, type of thing?
Yeah. We have an incredible network of people that helped us through that time. And we gave it a year after our final chemo to kind of make sure he was in a good spot. We got the blessing from our doctors and we felt good about it. So, and we kind of, we weren't rash about our decision and we weren't hasty about our decision, but we were adamant that we were going to do this thing. And if you remember, I don't know if you can remember the housing market at that time in the spring and summer of 2021, but it was a great time to sell a house if you didn't have to buy a new one.
Yes. Yes.
So we were kind of funded in a way that we could actually make a big difference for some people. And we ended up helping over 400 families.
Wow.
In some way. And our mission and our focus was we can't take cancer from these kids. We don't have that ability, even though I do believe we helped. But our goal was, hey, let's make their day 1% better. How can we do that? What do they need? Mm-hmm. And sometimes that was me showing up with all the guides. And, you know, without projecting that onto them, just kind of getting guidance as to what is really happening and what is really needed. And then, you know, of course, we would bring the toys to kind of ease them into our world and through that. And it was a very eye-opening time. It was very, but I learned how fatiguing healing can be going through that. And it gave me a lot of understanding of my clients now, you know, when we're building their business so it's sustainable so they can keep healing. You know, I understand when they say, I can't do more than two or three sessions at a time. I have understanding of that idea now where I wouldn't have had it before. So that was the gift that really I got from that time. It helped me out a lot too.
Wow. And I like how you said toys, right?
Yeah.
So when you were in the RV, and you were going and traveling, the tools that you had, toys, and I think you said the guides. Now, when you say the guides, are you saying the I guess clients and friends that helped you out, were they like one phone call away? Was there someone with you? And then what kind of toys were you playing with?
These are, well, the guides being my guides, my spiritual guides.
Okay.
And then I did have, you know, people at one phone call away in case I needed to use those emergency numbers a couple times. And then the toys that we were giving the kids were just there, the things you would expect, coloring books, trucks, pillows, you know, things that would comfort them into us being there. You know, these strangers rolled in to town and now they're at our house. You know, you have to have an icebreaker for a child so that you can connect with them and learn about them and get, you know, sort of their blessing to be there. You know, so we use the traditional toys as sort of our barrier to entry to kind of ease the child's mind that, you know, the parents already knew we were friendly, so it wasn't a weird situation. But, you know, you're talking to a 5-year-old and they're going to, unless there's something for them, they're going to not pay you much attention at all. And we actually need this connection. So we had to figure out a way to kind of foster that connection without, you know, and have a good time and distract them and show them a little break from the norm and let them meet my son and all that. So those are the toys that we use, and that's why we use them.
Is there any story or what story that, about a family that you helped out that may stand out from the rest?
There was a few. There was one in Kentucky when we were in Lexington, and we met this family, and the young had two sisters and he was the brother, and he had beaten cancer or was about to beat cancer. He was kind of on that where you could see the light at the end of the tunnel. And so we're talking to this family, and a month before he was diagnosed, their house burnt to the ground.
Whoa.
And so the whole family was displaced, and you know, you're raising 3 children, jobs, the whole 9, you don't have a house a month later. You're not rebuilt yet, not in any stretch of the imagination. And you get diagnosed with cancer and you spend the next 2 years doing that. And we met them and they were just the most positive, the kindest, the spiritually aligned. They were just not playing a victim. They didn't feel like a victim. They felt grateful. They felt enlightened. They felt chosen. They felt all the things that, you know, I would have a hard time feeling in those moments. And for me, that was just, I was like, there's something special. There's something beyond this mom and dad who are keeping this family up. There's something propping them up. And that feels good. And then we got there and met them, and you could just feel it. The energy was just super warm. Like it just kind of pulsated down your body. And and they never talked frantically. They never talked negatively. They never, you know, we had pizza. The kids played in the yard. We really got to connect with them on a deep level. That's one that really stands out. That was the first time I remember feeling like, wow, they actually are worse off than we were. Mm-hmm. And our kids are now playing. And so that's awesome. But how are they not bitter through this whole thing? And so that was really that was a real wake up call for me of, you know, when you relinquish control and you just let go and you listen, that's when you get that kind of energy. That's when you get that kind of
power. Yeah, man. That's interesting. Because it's always easier, right? It's always easier to play the victim. It's always easier
100%.
To place blame. And I do feel like if you are spiritually aware, even just a little bit, you do know that what you think about, you bring about. And so I'm pretty sure they're just like, they're fighting to be more positive, to bring about more positivity in the outcome. Like that's the best you could do when you have nothing left. You're like, all right, let's focus. Let's focus on the positive part. Yeah. I'm actually curious, how did you find these people as you just jumped into an RV? What's the missing piece to finding and locating these people? Was it an ad in the online, you know, Craigslist? Like
sometimes it was hey, we're here, who do you know that we need to know? But I think 90% of the time we were led to these people. And I can tell you story after story of, you know, we pulled up in Virginia and it was a very dingy kind of campground. We pulled up in the mud. It was raining. We had been on the road. I mean, I'd been in the car with my dog, my wife and my son for 4 hours. You know, I mean, we were traveling and everyone was just ready to get out of the car. Like, let's just get out. And so I was already negative on that particular stop. And I got out of the truck and we started opening the camper. And directly across from us, facing our camper, this lady walks out and she's on the phone and she's crying, just bawling. And she's talking on the phone and I walked out and I faced her just at that moment. I was just working, getting everything set up. And I face her and she says, "You're not going to believe who's here." And it turns out she was talking to her sister and her nephew had just been diagnosed and they were there to visit him and they took their RV so they didn't have to pay for a hotel room. And she walks out just bawling, comes up, gives me a hug immediately, hugs my wife. And she's talking. She's like, "These are the people you found on Facebook. They're here." You know? Wow. And so it happened like that 9 times out of 10. But there were some times where we had to, you know, call in, you know, the people around us, our community. But in this case in Lexington, it was a childhood friend of my wife who lives in London, whose sister is a nurse in Lexington. And she connected us with this family that she used to babysit the son, the kid who had cancer. And now she's a nurse. And so she was his nurse when he was diagnosed. And there was just this really interesting web. And that's how we got connected with that family. But yeah, wow. It's very seldom that we had to put the ad out, the bat phone kind of thing.
Right? Put the bat signal in the sky. We're coming. We're coming.
We're coming. We're here.
Well, that sounds like a really interesting journey. So bringing it back to what you're doing now, mm-hmm. I'm actually pretty curious. One of the really good questions that ChatGPT came up with, and this is not an ad, not a paid ad, is a good question. How do you ensure that the soul of the business remains intact while scaling up financially when working with your clients?
That's the hardest part because it's really easy to say more, more, more. And most of my clients, that's not what we're here to do. You know, so when we scale up a business, we don't scale up necessarily with the metric of revenue, which is we get the revenue part right, but we get it right in a sense that balances out, that allows them, you know, again, my mission as a light worker is to keep the healers healing. It's not to burn the healers out. It's not necessarily to make the healers super duper rich, although they do very well, you know, but what really its purpose is to create this balance of here's how business should look if you want to reach the people you're trying to reach or you help the people that you really want to help. And so when we scale up the business, it starts from day one of me asking, tell me about your mission, tell me about your vision, bring in all the people you need to bring in this moment, and let's just open the door to a communal conversation. And share with me why you're here. And that conversation, I don't feel like most people, I know I can't speak for everyone, but I know there's a point in my career, I wasn't comfortable having that conversation. I was just like, here's what you're going to do. Here's how we're going to do it. And then you're going to give me a testimonial and we're going to move on. You know, but now it's like, it's a lot more delicate than that. You know, I have to really understand their mission here in this life and their calling and their purpose and the things that they're wrestling with and why they're being pulled in one way or the other. And I have to understand that on a deep, deep level before we even start scaling or building anything out of it, because my job is to keep that person doing what they're here to do. And with that, if that is the focus in our work, we will get it right most of the time, even though there are times where we may say, hey, let's peel back a little bit. Like, we're getting a little too much. Like, let's peel back, let's scale it back a little bit. And I think that's the dance, but it's become a really beautiful, beautiful dance. And when you see someone who is doing that kind of work and they're actually helping a lot of people who are helping people, and you see that ripple effect start to just widen out, it is very, very satisfying, very, very fulfilling, and very, for me, it's kind of the attaboy. Like, okay, you answered a calling. And that's how I feel. So the scaling part is done very delicately, very carefully. It has to do with me and the entrepreneur, or me and the healer, or me and the yogi, whoever it is, understanding each other very, very well first.
Got it. Okay, cool. Well, one thing that came up to me, and I'm curious, when working with your clients, what would you say is the biggest challenge that you see people running into? Like that you're like, oh, okay, so this seems like something that someone in someone that's a healer or in the category of using spirituality runs into. I'm curious what you see the most of.
The most challenging part of the work that I do with these folks is separating their gifts from the marketing. If you ask a healer who they can help, the answer is always, well, about anybody, you know?
Yeah.
And so I understand that. I know that to be true. And I say, great. I don't want you to feel like your marketing is taking away from that, but we can't have marketing and go find the people we're here to help by saying we do anything for everyone. That's a Walmart mentality. Nothing against Walmart, also not sponsored, but it's kind of that mentality. So I think the first part is to say, from a business perspective, we're going to say things in our marketing to attract people that are looking for you. And then in that container, once they're in your world, yes, you help them with anything, you do your thing. But until that point, that, you know, we have to separate what you feel your gifts are from the way that we talk about it. And that's always a challenge to do sometimes, because it feels constrictive. It feels like you're boxing these, you know, multidimensional, you know, beings, you're boxing them in or caging them in some way. But then once people start to show up and they're going, oh, wait a minute, okay, I don't know that I would have gotten that person without saying this, which makes a lot of sense. You know, my marketing was targeted at the thing they were looking for, and then I showed up, and now here we are. Now I'm helping with their marriage, their business, their kids, their health. You know, I'm helping them with all the things. So that's the hardest part, is separating that, the gifts and the divine purpose from the marketing.
So when you're, I think you're talking about essentially the avatar, helping them identify the avatar.
Yep.
What's maybe one thing that you do that you see helping the most in assisting that person figure out what that avatar is, that narrowing down process? I'm curious on your method.
It's good. That's a good question. I'll kind of separate from spirituality to business, and we kind of yo-yo back and forth in those two worlds, because they do mix, but there's a logic behind the business part. And the logic, when someone comes into my world, our mantra is one client, one offer. That's it. Like, we're going for one avatar, one niche, solving one big problem with one offer. Like, this is, so at first this is the only way that you can work with me, be it the retreat, the one-on-one readings, the, you know, workshops, whatever it is. We really hone in on one client, one offer. That's it for a while. Then once we get to a certain level, we kind of circle back and say, okay, is that serving us? How does it feel? Is there anything we missed from the get? And we kind of tweak and retool from there. But when you have that as your goal, it's very easy to see who you're here to help and kind of what you help them with initially, when you're really saying, we're going to build out and expand. We're not going to be this forever. But at first, one client, one offer, build that out until you get to a certain point, and then we retool and scale.
Okay. Makes perfect sense. Narrows things down. Reminds me of a certain fruit company that did something similar. Trying not to give all this free advertising.
Free advertising.
So on that note, another question that comes up is something that is interesting, because you were able to go and hit the road and balance having a business and then also helping people on the road. And I speak from personal experience, where I tend to be a, let's say, overworker, right? And maybe it's a 26-8 thing, where, and a Capricorn thing, right? Where you find yourself just, I want to do everything right now. How do you find that balance when you're that type of person? Because it seems like you found a way to balance personal life, especially finding more value. You're no longer the guy on the soccer field with a cell phone. How did you do that? I think that's the question.
I agree. And I think I find a lot of value in the information I'm given through numerology and through, you know, astrology and all those things. I find a lot of value, but I don't think it defines you necessarily. You know, I think it's a good insight And so I think when you have to change something, like I was, my family's blue collar, my granddad owned a gas station, my dad's an entrepreneur. I spent 10 years in corporate. You know, I punch a clock. I show up. I don't take vacations. I don't call in sick. You know, that's me. You know, but I think when you have the perspective of, you know, part of your life and part of my son's life was taken from us, and how do I want to model for him as far as dad running a business and traveling and all these things? And it really is that we're taught that. We're taught to be workaholics. We feel like we're going to miss something, or like we're not going to, you know, live to our potential, things like that. And those were voices, those were the ideas that I really had to kind of battle when we were diagnosed. You know, I was working 6-7 days a week running two companies before. One was a real estate company. So the Friday that we were airlifted, that real estate company pretty much went away because we weren't going to be home. I wasn't in town. Mm. We were gone 4 months off for treatment. And so that company closed. And so I look back and I go, wow, that was a gift. And then I looked at my coaching business that I had at the time. And my wife and I had a talk, and she was like, you got about a day a week based on treatment. Cause we promised, we were like, our whole family will be at every treatment. He's not going alone. He's not going with one of us. We're going to be together. That's the energy we need. That's what we have to, you know, we need that strength. And so I ran the business on 1 day a week, which was incredibly uncomfortable. And wow. I did it from a pediatric cancer hospital for 70 weeks. And I think when you go from the mentality of being 6-7 days a week is what's required to 1 day a week is all I have, so I've got to be incredibly productive in that 1 day a week. Well, here's what happened in the first 6 months of me doing that. My revenue tripled.
That's insane.
Yeah. My revenue tripled from a hospital 1 day a week. And I didn't even realize at the time, because I was doing, you know, I was just in the cloud. But then I look back and I was like, well, how did that happen? And what I realized was, you know, I was allocating 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours a day to do a job that required me, that could be done in 4 hours. Hmm. You know, when you think about your productivity and what you're doing, it just changed the way I think about my day. And so I was like, okay, here are the things that are necessary. Here are the things that are important. And honestly, changing the font on my website again, I don't need to spend 4 hours researching script fonts and this and that and the other thing. Like, that doesn't matter, you know? So it was that migration of like, how do I do this? And now I haven't worked full-time since. I don't work full-time now. You know, if I work 4 days a week, that's a rare week. That's a busy week for me.
Wow.
And even though I do work hard, and so I kind of carried that out on the road where I work Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So I did work a little more than 1 day. Yeah. I worked Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We traveled on Sundays. We did adventures on Monday and Friday. Saturday was our pack up day, kind of family day. And that was, and we did that for 18 months, and here we are. So it's really about changing how you think about your day and what's really important, but also what are you trying to achieve? And what is really important, you know, for me at that time, it was don't go bankrupt. Like if I stop working, we're getting the bills from the hospital, and even though we have insurance and all that, but it was like, I've got to grow the business because we're going to need it to make sure that we keep going. And that's kind of how that showed up. But it gave me so many gifts about, and I think that's what I bring to my clients. You know, when you talk to healers and things like that, most of them aren't into working 70 hours a week doing what they do. It's just, energetically, it's impossible. Yeah. And so they have to see in me a practice of what we're working towards in some way. And for me, that's it. When I say, hey, here's the business I have, you know, and I can be a little more explicit as far as the numbers and the behind the scenes stuff with them. And I want you to have your version of that, whatever that is, you know, so that we don't burn you out, so that you stay a healer, a yogi, a light worker, whatever you're doing.
Yeah, burnout's huge in the healing world. Even my mother, who is at the time of this recording, hands-on personal training, and we actually did an episode. It's one of the first few episodes, and I interviewed her, and we shared how she would absorb the issues of her clients. And I'm like, work on that, woman.
Yeah.
She would have the pain, and then before she knew about it, and she would show up to the session, and they would say, oh, I have a pain in my left leg. And she was like, oh, it was you, you know? Totally. I'm sure you've seen that too. Yeah. So you mean to tell me that you, had one day to essentially manage and work with clients. Mm-hmm. How many, I'm curious, how many clients were you working with that you had to cram that? Like, what were you cramming into that one day? Because you have clients.
Yeah. So that during that time, one, I was very transparent about my energy and where I was. So my clients were very gracious to me at that time. I think I had 12 clients at the time. And so I would normally meet on the day that I worked, which is, I think it was normally Tuesdays, I would have a max of 4 client meetings. So I would meet with them, you know, once 1 to 3 times a month, depending on the client. And so every Tuesday I would have 4 client meetings and then have a few hours to kind of do my social media marketing, admin, billing, all that stuff. And then I would, you know, occasionally I would get a text or something like that on a random day out. But I was very specific that when I was with my son, I was with my son. Mm. And that the ties were, there was no work during that time.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that's kind of how I managed it. I kind of shifted from meeting once a week with everyone to saying, hey, I'm going to give you really good stuff, but we don't need to meet once a week. We can meet biweekly. And that allowed me to expand my roster of clients, but it also allowed me to preserve my energy. I had a hard stop after 4 client meetings in a day. I just didn't have any more in the tank. But I was able to then go into like creating social media posts or marketing or, you know, billing or some of the stuff that's not fun in business. You know, and but that's kind of how I managed it. And when we came out of our situation, I started to add days. My son got back into school, so obviously I had more time. I was like, well, hey, you know what? It would be a shame to go back to feeling like I need to hustle and grind and grow this monster company. You know, I still am the only employee in my company, and I want it that way. It's lean and mean. I have a few contract people that help me out, but I don't have anyone else's livelihood on my back, and I like not having that pressure right now. And so that really was for me, it was a boot camp of what do you want this to be? You know, my son is 9. I don't want to miss him being 10, 11, 12. You know, when he's 18, he's not going to want to hang out with me. I'll build the business then, you know, I'll do whatever is being called to me then. But for now it's like, let's keep it lean and mean. Let's keep it part-time. We make plenty of money. We help plenty of people and let's focus on that.
And it's interesting, you brought up how you want to keep your business lean and mean, and you have people saying, you know, you need a team behind you, and then you have a lot of solopreneurs, and then what you're doing is the contract work. Mixing that with spirituality, I like my processing, my mentality is, I'd rather, if I'm in the business of empowering people or inspiring people, like, and you're a coach, right? Mm-hmm. It feels weird to employ someone because in my mind, I'm like, you could have your own thing, right? Because you're, it's almost like a contradictory feeling. Do you feel like that's what you would run into? And so you would rather contract out to people?
I'm going to give an unpopular answer, probably. No, I don't feel like I would feel that way at all. Because I do think everyone has their role here. And
yeah.
You know, and I think that was a big awakening for me. You know, the download for me, there were two moments. One was in Yosemite Valley where we went into the rocks, into the valley, my family. And, you know, we had been out of heat. We'd been out of treatment. We'd been all that. And the rocks were requesting that I leave it here. The trauma, the pain. Wow. Yosemite was the mother that absorbed all that for me. That liberated me to explore, that liberated me to do these other things. So once I had that really powerful, powerful moment, I'm getting chills just telling about it, that sitting in Yosemite Valley and the rocks saying, it's okay, leave it here. It's okay, leave it here. Leave it here. Leave it here. You're free. Leave it here. And I was able to do that. Fast forward a few months later, we were in Monument Valley. And we had the honor of hanging out with Navajo Nation for a little while. And my son actually, instead of going to second grade and learning from a book, we learned from elders of Navajo Nation in Monument awesome. Valley, Utah, about the truth, I'll say. and that meant the world to me. But it was in that moment, probably a few weeks after, where this vision of a wolf came into my world. And I realized that I am a wolf for these healers, meaning that I am a protector of the healers. I am not necessarily a healer in and of myself, but I am a protector of the healers. That is my role. I am loyal to these healers. I'm loyal to these light workers. I'm loyal to these people. But my role is not to be the lead singer, so to speak. My role, I'm a great bass player. Put me off to the back and I support these people. And so I think when you think of that and you consider that, you know, whatever, wherever you're at on your spiritual journey, you have to play that role. And there's been, looking back in my life, I was an employee for a lot of times. And if someone had said, go do your own thing, it would have been way too soon. It would not have been in service of my bigger purpose. I had to kind of sit there and be in that. So I feel like I would approach it in that same way. When I do get to the point of bringing people in full time, I will understand that where they are now is where they should be. They're going to learn a ton from me. And as soon as they say, I want to go out and do this thing, I'm going to help them. And so I would kind of approach it from that perspective, as far and instead of trying to push someone who may or may not be ready yet to go do their own thing.
That's actually pretty cool. The stones gave you that message, and then the 100%. Wolf came up. That's very symbolic, and that's I'm thinking about the movie The Wolf of Wall Street, where he just took over, and I'm like, but that's not a good analogy, John.
So but, I understand what you mean, though.
But yeah, because the dude was aggressive.
I
to send it off, right, to end this with a nice bow. Looking to the future, what do you think are the key traits that visionary leaders need to foster to lead the next generation of business, specifically spiritual entrepreneurs in that world?
I see and I feel in our world that there's a lot of people who are really good at telling what they do, how they do it, how you should do it. There's a lot of people that are really good with, they have the information and they have the platform and they're really good at telling. One of the things that I think is going to be imperative as we move forward is we have to show, we have to model. You know, you can't be a spiritual entrepreneur and not talk about your spirituality. You can't be a spiritual entrepreneur and not be great at business. Right? And so we have to model that behavior. And I think that's one of the things that I stand very proud of my past, through the ups and downs, the questions and the answers and all the other thing. I can stand in front of my clients now and say, I have what I have. You don't have to have this, but I want you to have your version of this, because I have the business I want. I have troubles in my life. I have struggles. I have bad days, but I pretty much live on my terms. And I think when we have a lot of lighthouses out there who are showing these people coming up in business that this is what's possible, and it's kind of counterintuitive from what you've told or what they say on YouTube University, like you say, and I'm a big fan of YouTube University, I think that's going to be very important as we move forward.
I agree for sure, right? And that aligns with a quote that I like is, be the change you seek to see in the world, by Gandhi. Yeah, I think Gandhi. You pretty much summed that up. So as we come to a close, awesome conversation, really cool stories. I feel like there's a lot of powerful information out there right now. Well, that you just put here to put out there. When it comes to, let's say someone was moved by your story and found that they vibe with you, how would somebody connect with you to work with you, and what are some maybe new projects that you're working on that you want to share?
The best way is to go to my website, mynextcrest.com. On there, you can pick your path. You know, everything from, I do a free training for spiritual-based entrepreneurs every month. I will train you for free for the rest of your life if you need it. But you can sign up for that mastermind. There's different versions of what we do. What I'm working on now is a next level thing called Elevation. And actually we're talking about numerology. It's got the number 8 in Elevation for that reason, because that's kind of my jam. But I'm working on that, where once you get the business up and running, where do you go for spiritual support? Where do you go for to find community of high level spiritual based entrepreneurs? So that's kind of my next project. You can learn all about that through the website, but it kind of, that's the best way to connect with me. My email is not a secret. It's on the website. Just click that. It'll give you my email address. I got nothing to hide. I'm not worried about people harassing me or anything like that. Just send me an email. Like, I'll answer. It's all good.
Very cool. Well, thanks for coming on the show. You heard the man. Contact him. Lots of really good information. This guy has a lot of good information. And when it comes to this show, if you liked what you heard today, like, share, follow. Thanks again for coming on the show, Kevin. I appreciate you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Such a pleasure.